Good morning. Welcome to the July 26th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Here.
Commissioner Moultrie?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Chairman Harrison?
Here.
Please let the record indicate Commissioner Brown is absent.
Would you all please stand and join me in the flag salute?
Again, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, our first order of business is public comment. Anyone that would like to make a public comment on any item that's not on the agenda today, please bring your form, give it to, and you can have 3 minutes to speak. We don't have any forms at the time. I don't see anyone coming to speak, so close public comment and go to the first, actually, Commission business, Ellen.
Right, planning staff updates. That would be me. So, good morning, commissioners. Give you an overview of what's coming up on your agendas. The August 9th meeting has been canceled, so you got a free day there. Your next date would be August 23rd, and we have three items on that date. I need to remind everybody that these are all tentative until they're noticed and actually on an agenda. Three items: the Templeton Tennis Ranch, which they're amending their conditional use permit regarding allowing events. We have a tract map in Templeton for 8 lots, and then the Jack Ranch agricultural subdivision is on that date also. And the commissioners were handed out or should have received EIRs for that project. Mm-hmm. So that's August 23rd, three items. The next meeting would be September 13th, and at this point we have two items: the PG&E North Ranch Access Road in the Avila Beach area, and then there's a variance for grading on slopes of over 30% in the Cayucas area. So two items on September 13th, tentatively scheduled. September 27th, Thursday, September 27th, we have two items: People Self-Help housing project, which is 33 apartments in the Cambria area, and then the Hodge parcel map and development plan in the Avila Beach area, which is 4 condominiums and then 3 hotel suites. I think that's about as far as I'll go. October 11th is your next meeting after that, and at this point we don't have anything scheduled on that date. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, have any questions? Thank you. Now we have our consent agenda. Does anyone have any comments, board members, on the consent agenda?
I just have one minuscule thing, but on page 1 of 6, planning staff updates report that Michael Moultrie will be absent on the July 23rd Planning Commission meeting. I didn't know we met last Monday.
Thank you.
So noted.
Any other comments? We need a motion to approve it.
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. Call the roll.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Oh, yeah, I could have done that.
You could have done that, right.
Okay, our next item of business. Ramona, would you like to introduce it, please?
Hearing item number 3 is a hearing to consider a request by Hurley Ranch, LLC. County file number SUB 2018-00009, Supervisorial District 4, Project Manager Shawnee Sion.
All right. Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Commission. So I'm Shawnee Siong from Planning Department. So what we have today is a tract map amendment. So this amendment will revise 2 conditions of an already approved tract. This condition actually limits certain color values and roof outlines. And also, this amendment includes removing these two conditions from all the lots except for lot 5 and 6. So a little bit of a context and history here. This tract is a 13-lot subdivision in the Arroyo Grande Fringe area. It was approved in 2014. It was recorded as tract 3053 in 2017. So these conditions, they were put in place to protect the visual resources of the area at the time of the subdivision. So just a little further on, the two conditions are actually that affected by this amendment. They're numbered 50G and 50I. They're in the additional map sheet. The same two conditions are repeated in the CCNR sheet, and they're just numbered 51L and 51N. So the project is located off Old Oak Park Road between Vetter and Earhart Road. It is in the residential rural land use category. Here's an aerial of the property. This is a little older aerial image. So what we have here, what we're looking at, is actually a constraints map. At the time of the environmental review for this subdivision back in 2014, the applicant submitted this plan. It outlined, you know, with the colored patches you can see here on the property, these are all the existing vegetation, wetland, oak woodland, and groves. So in order to protect the biological resources that's already existing on the site, the buildable areas were then plotted for each of these lots. So as you can see, the buildable areas, which is I highlighted here on lot 5 and 6, they're pretty generous. And so visual simulations were produced also to evaluate the potential visual impacts from the development as seen from the public roads. So primarily the focus was on lot 5, 6, 12, and 13 for the visual impacts. And so ultimately, at the end of the environmental review, visual mitigations were put on as track conditions to protect the rural visual resources of the area and also to minimize the potential visibility of future houses as seen from these roads. So this is another slide with another more recent aerial and site photographs. Just to illustrate here, lot 5 and 6 along Vetter. The buildable area for lot 5 and 6 is actually kind of up the slope, so there's a potential that the lot owners could build on top of a, it's close to the ridge line, it's silhouette over the natural ridge line. So as someone drives up and down Vetter, they could actually see a prominent house. On the other side, on the Earhart side, is actually protected, pretty much well screened by existing wetland riparian vegetation. So the road here has a lot of natural existing mature trees to provide screening. On the southern side, of the tract, where lot 12 and 13 are, there, with a recent site visit, staff evaluated that there are a lot of mature oak trees there, and they could provide adequate screening for future houses. Originally, during the 2014 subdivision application, it was thought that the building envelope for lot 12 and 13 was pretty close to Old Oak Park Road and might result in some visual impact. But then with a recent site visit, the staff reconsidered that the existing trees can provide adequate screening and supported the applicant's request to remove this visual mitigation condition from these two lots. So here we actually have the wording of the two conditions. So with the proposed amendment, condition number 50G, this is the condition that limits the color and roof outlines. This condition will be revised to only be applicable for lot 5 and 6 instead of all lots. The other condition, 50I, this is the condition that requires measures to reduce visibility from public roads. This condition is now revised to only be applicable for on lot 5 and 6, and it will be removed from 12 and 13. So like I said earlier, these two conditions, they're repeated in the CCNR sheet. They're numbered as 51 L and N, so those will be amended too when they go and re-record the amendment. So with all this information, staff is recommending approval of this tract map amendment subject to the findings and conditions set forth in the Exhibit A and B, and also for your commission to adopt the negative declaration addendum prepared for this project. That concludes my presentation.
Any questions for the board? Do you have any questions?
I'm just sitting here pondering. I was here when we had this, and remember the discussions. But I'm just trying to remember, why wasn't this approached at the time we approved this in like 14 or something, or heard it 13 or 14?
14.
This track, way back in 2014, they have other issues that they were a little bit more pressing, like water and drainage, erosion. They were very much focused on addressing those concerns. I think it was the visual mitigation was actually more of a it was known, and it was known to the applicant at that time, but they were not they were okay with the conditions as applied. But they realize now they would like the county to reconsider that the visual mitigation only be applicable to the lot 5 and 6, which actually is most prominent and most visible of all the entire lots, I mean, all the tract.
Okay, I'm just pondering here how, when you drive around this county or any other county in the state, they obviously don't, everybody doesn't hide their house from the road. So I find this rather amazing that we're having to discuss hiding a house from somebody seeing it when they drive by. But whatever.
I have a question, then, Jim. Since we're going to ask questions now, I don't think substantively the issue is a big deal, but you were supposed to allow changes to mitigation measures and conditions when circumstances change. What's changed? Is it just that we're rethinking this now, or we made a mistake? Or has something actually changed? Steve?
Commissioner Moultrie, I don't think there's actually a physical change. I think in this case, the mitigation measure was appropriately identified for some of the lots, as we covered. It was probably with more fine-tuning visual analysis at that time. We could have limited, as Shandi said, there were other issues that were driving that, and the applicant at the time was willing to accept the mitigation kind of applied to all the lots. I think in this case, the change is they would like to change some of those conditions. We look at it in the context of does that change affect the conclusions of the mitigated negative declaration? Meaning, does it change the results? Obviously, retaining the mitigation on those two lots that are the primarily visible ones, that mitigation is still effective on those. Those were the driver with the additional visual information, and we concluded that that was really the driver of the need for visual mitigations, and are removing it from the lots that really didn't warrant it, but at the time was acceptable to broadly apply. Mm-hmm. This sometimes happens with tracts where we've got a lot of lots. We're analyzing specifically. We prefer to apply the mitigations just to the lots necessary, but sometimes in the movement forward, applicants and staff will sometimes apply mitigation more broadly just because it's easier. And then when they find out when the lots are being developed, they want to fine-tune it. And so that's where we are today.
I understand that. But there really has been no change. This is just kind of a redo.
No, but there's no limit that the applicant can request.
Okay.
A relook, essentially, at it, and that's what we have today.
But just a point of information, given our terrain in this county, et cetera, it's sometimes difficult to pinpoint. There may be not a lot of choices as to where you can grade and put a house. So when you use the word visual mitigation, are you talking about tree screening rather than house relocation?
Well, there's a number of measures. I mean, we kind of have a toolbox of measures. You know, initially, placement of lots so that they don't. Typically, what we're looking at is, you know, how visible in the context that they're in, meaning the views from that specific stretch of public road, how long development would be visible. You know, we kind of have a hierarchy of if it's visible and it silhouettes on a ridgetop where you really can see. That's, you know, more important than something that maybe is visible but further down and is backdropped by the landscape. So kind of going through how visible, what is the context, are there other development that is visible? All of that is taken into consideration. You know, reciting something in a critical visual area so that it's not visible is the best, because then you're avoiding the impact. I mean, that's you're assuring the impact is not going to occur if you can site development where it doesn't silhouette. And from there, we work through shielding, lighting, colors, or landscaping, kind of as appropriate. I will say the commission sees visual mitigation maybe more than others because you tend to see the larger tracts or the larger projects. We certainly do not require it on every project. We really do look at the context of projects, and if development is visible and is in context with everything else from that stretch of road, we try not to over-apply.
Thank you.
What colors can't they use on those houses?
So just tying on to what Steve was saying, there are different aspects for the visual mitigation. One of the aspects that we can actually place the parameters are colors and materials. And so the county moved away from actually prescribing anything specific, but we rely on a kind of color system called the Munsell book colors chart. And I have a slide here I'd like to show Ramona. Okay, so this is like a sample color where it shows the value and the chroma. So this is the Munsell color system. It's a systematic way to categorize each color in a numerical manner. And the county is not saying what color they can choose. They can have any color they want as long as they have a value of six. Value and chroma of six and below. And the objective of this is to make sure that the color, whatever color they select, is darker, is not too bright, and so is to reduce the visibility of the future house seen from the public road. So that's the parameters set in the color scheme.
Yeah, the general concept, and this is something that the county, the department worked on probably 15, well, actually probably now 20 years ago. We had someone who was a specialist who was an architecture professor who kind of developed this, that is, and essentially the idea is lighter colors advance, darker colors recede. So you're always going to notice the white house on top of the hill than the house that's gray, let's say. And so what we've gone to is the values of the color that make it more visible versus values that make it less. Then anyone can choose any color from any of the scheme as long as the chroma and value are within those parameters. The other thing, too, that we typically look for is dark roofs, so that and that ends up oftentimes being the most visible part of a structure, depending on how steep the roof pitch is and things like that. But that also is another factor. So sometimes only a very small portion of the body of the house is actually visible, or sometimes it's more visible. But that's the color limitations are not a color palette, but a chroma and value.
What's to stop them from painting them with a different value 10 years from now, after built?
Technically, they would be out of compliance with with the conditions of approval and subject to enforceability. I don't think we've ever had one of those. usually the cost of repainting is a big factor, but typically that has not been an issue.
Thank you. Any more questions for staff? Does the applicant like to make a presentation or say something? If you do, come to the podium and talk about it. I'm sorry?
We're good with it.
Okay. Does anyone have a motion they'd like to make? Is there any public comment on this? Seeing no public comment, I close public comment. Bring it back to the board. Thank you.
I do have just more comment before. Okay. Like I said, I'm not opposed to making it easier for people to paint their houses different colors and to do different roof lines and stuff. I guess two thoughts. One is, as you drive up, which is the longer road, not Vetter, the Earhart, as you go farther along that street, the eucalyptus actually thin out quite a bit, and you will be able to see those lots pretty well from the street. I don't know how much traffic's on there and whether that makes a big deal or not. Also, though, when you go into the subdivision itself, onto the private drive, and look out, it's in a valley, and all these houses all around are going to see what gets built there. So that wasn't the original visual concern, but it's going to be noticeable to everybody who lives within a big distance around. So, but still, these are going to be expensive houses. I think people will design them and paint them in reasonable ways. I would be most concerned about, as Steve said, roofs and the colors of roofs. But I think it will be okay in this case. And then just more generically, there's something in me that doesn't like the idea of people accepting conditions for a tract, signing off on the mitigation measures, and then coming back and saying, gee, you know, those conditions which I thought were okay or which I agreed to get the thing approved, I'd like to have a redo on these things. And this isn't the first time we've discussed this at the commission. And so philosophically, I really would say that we limit this approach of saying yes to get something approved for a tract and then coming back and saying, oh, let's change the conditions afterwards. So anyway, that's all.
I agree.
Anything else? Now do I have a motion?
I move to accept the amendment to this item on the agenda in regards to the conditions that have been set forth and to amend those conditions.
I'll second it, agreeing with Commissioner Moultari about this comeback situation. I don't think we want to see it very often, if at all. So I'll second it in that basis.
And I have one comment before we vote. The only question I had is what changed? And Mr. Moultari brought that out. So call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Moultari?
Yes.
Chairman Harrison?
Yes. Our next item of business.
Hearing item number 4 is a hearing to consider a request by Joe and Linda Lippe and AT&T Mobility for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2017-00017, supervisorial district number 5, project manager Young Choi.
Okay, before we begin, does anyone have any ex parte?
No, sir.
Seeing none, go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Young Choi. I'm here with our staff planner, Kate Shea. We are here on behalf of Ms. Holly Phipps, who was the project manager, who was not able to make it to our meeting today. So the item here before you is regarding a wireless communication facility for direct high-speed wireless broadband internet disguised in a 60-foot artificial monopine to house 10 antennas. Within a 700-square-foot lease area, along with a 6.5-foot block wall on three sides and a wood fence on one side, along with the gate. And this 137-square-feet equipment pad and outdoor will also house the outdoor equipment cabinets, emergency backup diesel generator, as well as two air conditioning units. This project is located on 10550 Little Quail Road, directly southeast of the Park Hill Road and the Little Quail intersection, located in about 7 miles east of Santa Margarita, within the North County Planning Area, Las Piletas sub-area. Here is our land use category. This site is located within rural lands area, and as I mentioned, within our North County Planning Area. This is the aerial view of this proposed site. As you can see, there is a single-family residence, agricultural barn, and a pre-1970s mobile house as well. This is the site plan that the applicant provided, depicting the aerial view along with the existing power pole and the new utility trenching, along with the new driveway access. And as you can see, the lease area is on the northern part of the property, a little bit to on a little right to the center. Here, this is a site plan showing the contours. As you can see, the applicant has located their tower almost where at the top of the knoll is to provide maximum coverage and lower the height of the proposed monopole. Now, this is the elevation showing you the monopine. The top of the antenna will be about 50 foot, and there will be another 10 additional foot of the tree, so a total of 60-foot monopine tree. The picture that you're seeing is the gate slash the fence. It's a chain link fence with the wooden slat to provide more durability. And this is the western elevation showing you the concrete block wall. It's about 6.5 foot total. Because of the intervening topography, some of the wall may have to go underneath to support the soil as well. And this is the visual simulation looking from the southeast from Park Hill Road. So you'll be seeing this part of the viewshed when you're driving east on the Park Hill Road. And this one looking directly at the cell tower just across from the property. And now this is when you're driving west from Park Hill Road. You could see that the existing gray pine trees are blocking the view of the proposed monopine. So this is the coverage of the proposed site. The picture on the top is the existing coverage, and the other picture is the proposed site. As you can see that there is no broadband wireless internet service in this area, and here is just a little detailed view of the proposed coverage. As you can see, the small circle is the project site. Staff received some neighbor concerns regarding noise impact from the air conditioning unit. The response that was made by Holly Phipps is also included in your packet. The staff comment is that we have our condition 46, 47, and 48 that addresses noise concerns, and those condition is required because that is our noise element from our general plan, and all applicants are required to meet such general plan and our ordinance as well. The AC units will provide about 66 decibels at the source. However, the nearest sensor receptor is more than about 300 feet away. And staff has a noise study that was provided by the applicant today. Now, there was another concern regarding a light and glare. There is an emergency light that is proposed at the entrance of the driveway gate. This is a motion sensor detectable light. It is required to be shielded and only to be used during the emergency access lighting for the emergency access. And staff did receive another last-minute letter just yesterday on July 25th. Commissioner, I believe you guys also have a copy. Yes. And staff is ready to answer some of the concerns that were on the letter today. Before we go any further, I would like to remind about the Federal Telecommunication Act of 1996. As you may aware, some of our county is preempted from making decisions regarding RF sensitive health issues regarding this project. So a few items that was mentioned in the letter was that the company did not provide a need. As mentioned in our proposed coverage, this is for wireless internet broadband, not a 4G cellular service. And as looked here, there is no coverage on this site. Therefore, it does need the evidence of need. We also heard that there were residents and the Santa Margarita Advisory Council were against the implementation of the project. However, the Santa Margarita Advisory Council did not recommend any recommendation. They refrained from making a recommendation. However, there were a lot of concern regarding health and public safety. And as far as staff is concerned, we have only received two letters, one letter today and the other letter considering the noise from the AC unit and the light as well. And the project, the letter goes on along with the decrease in property value and loss of income. However, our Title 22 does not allow our county to consider a neighbor's property value when reviewing our wireless facility application. And even if we had such provision on our Title 22, the claim that the project will have an impact on property value or local business is speculative, and it's not supported by substantial evidence. And in order for staff to find the findings, we would require substantial evidence to do so. The letter also alludes to fire risk as well. However, the project has been reviewed by our CAL FIRE, and they are required to follow the fire safety plan as required, and that would satisfy CAL FIRE's requirement for this development. The other items that were on the letter was regarding the building permit that was associated with the project. There is no building permit on file with the county yet, since this project has not been approved. However, the letter does mention about the construction that was happening yesterday.
Excuse me, just one second. You mentioned two letters, and the one you're referring to now is the one we received last
yesterday,
night.
Yesterday,
okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes. So the letter alludes to there was a construction activity yesterday. I called the applicant and confirmed that it was boring test for their soil test, and the applicant is here, the agent is here to answer any detailed question regarding that building permit.
Any thought about the apiary comment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat your
the
question?
The apiary comment was also in the letter.
So we did look into those as well. However, we could not find any substantial evidence regarding the harmful effects of the telecommunications site to the apiary ecosystems. Now, moving forward, the staff recommendation is to adopt the mitigated negative declaration that was prepared for this project according to the California Environmental Quality Act, and to approve the conditional use permit DRC 2017-00017 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And staff and the agent is here to answer any questions you may have today.
Does the applicant have any presentation you'd like to make?
I'm here to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions of the applicant?
And you're representing AT&T?
Yeah.
Yeah, so good morning, commissioners. My name is Jerry Ambrose. I'm here on behalf of AT&T. I think staff's done a good job of explaining or addressing the letter from yesterday and also the letter regarding noise. And I'm here to answer any additional questions you may have.
I do have a question.
Go right ahead, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for coming.
Good morning.
In the letter that we received from the neighbors to the west, and I went out there and looked, and this is going to be right visible to them. It's going to be obviously overlooking their properties. And they suggested that if we were not to deny the project but approve it, could the antenna be moved to the northwest? And I'm wondering, is there flexibility in moving it, because it really is right lined up with their house. If they moved it, if you can move it at least a little bit to the northwest, it would really make a big difference visually, I think.
Yeah, I looked at that yesterday evening. I got the letter yesterday afternoon as well. I estimated it's about 100 feet, maybe 120 feet northwest. There's some slope there. We would have to go out in the field and verify that it would work. But, you know, 100 feet, I don't think technically would make a difference. It's just there's a lot of extra cost, obviously, on our part to kind of redo things. We'd have to get the property owner to agree. Okay with it, because they specifically wanted us where we are.
I understand.
In relation to the use of their property.
But in terms of the effectiveness of the antenna, moving it 100 feet apart from dealing with the slope and these other issues, it would work as well?
I think so. And we may need to be taller. That I can't answer.
Okay.
I mean, generally speaking, it's probably viable. It's just we would have to verify with AT&T engineers, et cetera.
Very good. Thank you.
I basically, that was the same question I had. I guess my conundrum in this is that, thanks to the fair, I didn't see this till about 10 o'clock last night, so obviously I didn't have time to do an ex parte, or I certainly would have gone out there. And we may hear in public comment from the gentleman or the people that wrote this, and it's quite comprehensive and quite complete. Not that I agree with all of it, but I do have a concern about the apiary. I've been an agriculturist all my life, and I think there's some merit to what's stated about bee activity and humming and these types of things that could affect it, to maybe something that we don't even hear ourselves could affect the bees that he has there. Anyway, I'm kind of going to hold this up until we hear some public comment, perhaps, and I also had the question of the alternative site that was cited by this gentleman. So let's wait and see what happens in public comment.
I do have one other technical question.
Michael?
A question about the air conditioning. My understanding is that doesn't run continually, but is only intermittent. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The air conditioning unit.
Air conditioning runs when it's, you know, really hot. Which will be a lot of the summer. Out in that area.
It will be a lot of the summer.
Okay. And we did provide another lengthy document. It's about 40 pages, a noise study, which shows that we're well in compliance with your noise ordinance, the county noise ordinance.
But again, moving it downslope on the other side away from the house would probably help from the noise standpoint.
It moves it further west, but then it's closer to
some
anyone
of the other
else
property.
On the other side. So, you know.
Right. Got it.
There's neighbors all around, basically.
That's right.
I'm trying to say.
Thanks.
What temperature does it come on at, the air conditioner unit?
I don't know what exact temperature. I just know when it's 100 degrees, 100 degrees in Santa Margarita, it'll be running.
We can be sure it's been on the last
It'll be running. Most sites in Paso Robles, you know, they run because it gets hot. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now I'm going to open it to public comment, but I don't have any request to speak. So if you would like to speak, fill out the form and give it to over here, and you've got 3 minutes. But fill out this form.
Yeah. Yes, my name is Mike Canodal. I live across the street from the site, and I have a vineyard and a winery, and my house sits up on top of the hill, which is approximately 2,040 feet, and I can see, I'll be able to see the tower unless they put it behind the hill on the west side. And I know the noise is going to be a problem, because out there, I mean, I can hear a hummingbird that's 100 feet away, okay? And also, I have one problem that when I applied for my land use permit for the winery, I had to send letters to my neighbors, and if I had one that rejected it, it was over. Now, why doesn't that exist now?
Would you repeat that, please?
What I'm saying is when I applied for my land use permit for my winery, the Planning Commission was the first thing I had to do was send out letters to my neighbors. And if one rejected it, it was over. Now, that was back in, I got bonded in 2006. So it was around the process, it was probably around 2005. So I don't know if policies have changed, but I don't think that's right. You know, and I'm also concerned about The aesthetic does, it really makes it really means a lot to me. I put a lot of money and hard work in my winery. And to see something like that across the street, I know there's going to be diesel generators. I'm sure I'm going to be able to hear it. And my property is the highest in that area. So I know I'm going to have a visual problem with that. And also the property value. I put a lot of money in this winery. I guess that's my conclusion. Thank you.
Okay, well, make sure you fill out a slip, sir. Our next request to speak is Ryan. And when you come, state your name when you get up here, please.
I have a PowerPoint slide I'd like to show.
Can you, his last name?
Yeah. Oh, he's the one that wrote the letter.
Oh, okay.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Alon is.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Thank you, Planning Commission. My name is Dr. Ryan Alaniz. I'm the co-owner of Tierra del Cielo Farms, which is directly to the east of the proposed location. I'm also the executive director of the Football Project, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. my concerns are that my request is that you deny this project for the following reasons that were stated in my letter yesterday. Two things that wasn't commented on by the county was the project harm. There is academic evidence that illustrates that there is harm due to bees and to the biosphere, as well as the project was incomplete. It did not actually show the RF rating, and I didn't hear them address that issue. So beyond that, if you do not decide to deny, we request that you mitigate this issue. This slide's not working.
Yeah, something's not working.
Great. Next one. This is a picture, as you can see from our letter, of our patio looking over. Our property, we have two Airbnbs, which supports our family, as well as we do farm tours and beehive tours. So this is the slide looking from our patio. If you could go to the next slide. And this is a proposed location of the fence line and the tree or the cell tower. There is no part of our property whatsoever where you will not be able to see the cell tower, the tree. It is what it is. But at the very least, we really request that you mitigate this issue by moving it to the northwest side of the knoll. Next slide. So that at least that kind of carbuncle is hidden, that eyesore is hidden from our every single day vision. Every time I walk out to go to work, I'll see that large fence line. I didn't move out to the country to live next to a cell phone tower, but if it is accepted, then at least this could be a small thing that the ninth wealthiest corporation in the United States could do to address our concerns. If you could go to the next slide. Again, as you've noticed in the letter, this is just moving it to the northwest. I don't have the topographic knowledge to know exactly where it should go, but our biggest concern is that it's visually below the height, the elevation of the knoll, so that the building and the fence line are below the knoll on the northwest, hiding it from us. It will move it to the northwest, but there are no houses near that area where it'll be closer to. We are the closest house. It's perfectly visible from our house. And so that's our big request, is that it's moved, mitigated to the northwest side of the knoll. Next slide. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me, and I really appreciate you listening to our concerns.
The distance from your house is what, estimated?
Approximately 400 feet, or 470 feet, I think.
Yeah, it's in this letter.
Yeah, it's in the letter. I realized just quicker to get it from him.
Is there any other public comment? Seeing none, I'm going to close it to public comment and bring it back to the board. Any comments from the board?
I'd like clarification on the RF issue. The letter points that everything's fine as far as reception, and yet staff says there is no reception. So I think we're talking about two different situations. I'm not a big computer expert. So explain the difference between no coverage and the coverage we think we have.
I think our agent could tell you the difference between the cellular coverage versus the broadband internet coverage.
Exactly. Can you clarify that, please, sir?
Yeah, so as part of AT&T's license with the FCC, the FCC has mandated that AT&T provide a high-speed wireless broadband service to areas of the country where the U.S. Census considers to be, you know, unserved by most, you know, modern technology, fiber optic, et cetera. So the FCC is mandating AT&T to provide this wireless broadband service. It actually will go to the home. It's not geared towards, you know, driving and using your phone. It's actually, there's going to be a receiver on people's homes. So this is a mandate, and this is one of the areas where AT&T has to serve and has to bring this service.
We've had these before, so yes. That my conclusion in what you just said would be, relative to property values, probably a plus for somebody looking for property if it was a direct thing to their home and they operated their business or worked for a company with computers out of their home. As
correct.
Opposed, like you say, to the cell phone and the
correct.
That type
the counter argument is that, you know, technology is changing and our whole society is changing. We're moving towards, you know, wireless. You know, there's no investment in the copper landline phone systems anymore. Those are.
I understand, right.
So, yeah, correct. And that would be a benefit in this particular.
Now, then the second question along that line would be, what about the emission of RF signals or whatever? Is it the same with the other situation as it is with the broadband, or worse or better, or what?
Right, it's a very similar frequency.
AT&T
owns several frequency bands.
Okay.
And it's very close to the existing frequencies that they have.
And then the last question, and I'll leave you alone. What other sites? I'm in sympathy with this 450 feet. It's pretty darn close for the rest of your life and you're living there. But what other sites have you looked at in that realm of Park Hill Road where you think it's needed?
Yeah, we looked at basically the center of where we need to be is somewhere near La Estrada and Park Hill Road, somewhere right in there. So we looked at and reached out to seven different property owners. We initially had interest from the folks right directly north on La Estrada. They had a family, a terrible thing happened in their family so that we couldn't move forward with them. But we initially started there designing a tower there, and then that fell through. And then we reached out to these other owners, including Mr. Lance. I recall I talked to him several months ago and ultimately came up with this property as being a property where we had an interested owner, a property where we could set the tower back from the street. Aesthetically, we felt aesthetically we could make it blend in. And it meets the technical needs of the network.
So. Now, when you're looking for a site, do you take into consideration forest lands, BLM lands, large ownership lands such as Kaiser Pit, et cetera?
If
do you look
in
at that
area,
as a first priority?
No. I can tell you that the forest, National Forest Service, really doesn't allow just a cell site on their land. They have to go through some kind of federal designation as a communication site, and there's all kinds of, I've had those rejected.
So you can put it in somebody's backyard, but not on public land.
Well, I can't speak. Yeah, it should be easier because, you know, federal is federal, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, it's not. Okay. But we do go sometimes on BLM land in certain cases. But again, we're talking about a very small area, mm-hmm. and the purpose here is to cover these homes that are in this valley. So it's all private property right there.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Question for staff.
Okay. First off, I certainly agree with the fact that as technology changes, homeowners and residents and businesses all need to have access to these services. And so we've seen this before, and we know it's going to continue. I think that I've been trying to wrap my head around this thing with these trees, and I know we've got more coming up, and this is something because of the demand and the need. I would love to see AT&T, Verizon, et cetera, work with communities, not necessarily per specific one, but on a better design, if you will, for these towers for the future. And that would be, I'm thinking, like, what looks good that tall that doesn't impact? And, you know, and the only thing I could come up with was windmills, the old-fashioned windmill boxes.
We've done windmills before. Yeah. They look a little clunky, though, mm-hmm. because of all the equipment.
Oh, yeah.
You have a small windmill, but then you have all this.
Yeah, something that went back to the rural nature, but also, you know, had some functionality. And, I mean, I certainly have the sympathy with the neighbors. I do know that, you know, you get accustomed, and I do think that there's ways to enhance these sites. And I'd like to see more of that happening because of the kinds of pushback that we're getting. But I also would be interested to know if the landowner would be if that technically feasible to move that to the north, would the landowner have the lease interest and all of that? Does that, you know, I mean, that's kind of what the option would be at this point, and considering where this is in position to the neighbors. Right. I'm not necessarily opposed to this site going up, but I do think that working with people, and that goes back again to the staff question, is as far as notifications on items like these, so people could give feedback, does that not occur, or has that occurred? I don't know.
We did go to the advisory committee, and as he explained, there was no action taken, no formal action. Typically, these things... these sites, it's usually, any issues are usually with the people who are directly affected around the properties. Mm-hmm. We don't usually run into see much with the advisory councils.
Well, staff, are letters required for this like they are for other things within certain distances in our radius?
Commissioner Campbell, no, there is a special noticing requirement or pre-noticing requirement for ag processing, which includes wineries and olive oil. So that special notice or pre-notice really is really a function of that part of the ordinance.
Okay, but not
and it's not required for communications. Okay.
But as a conditional use permit, the normal 300-foot noticing occurred. Is that correct?
That's correct. But there is a special longer distance pre-notice for ag, which is what the speaker was discussing.
I understand. So there's a special rule when it comes to wineries and those things that it's different from everything else. And this is one of those everything else's, and it did get notice pursuant to that. Okay. I have questions for the staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
There was a letter that we received from, I think it was the Chumash tribe or Salinas, and where they thought that they had some concerns. Were those addressed? And is, I guess, the standard conditions are adequate for that?
Was that letter regarding the light and noise from
No,
Mr.
it was,
Mr.
had
Speaker?
To do with the trenching, I believe.
Artifacts that you might find during trenching, I think.
And so we have standard county conditions that address that, I suppose, or mitigations.
Commissioner Moultrie, good morning. Kate Shea, County Planning Staff. Again, Young Choi is representing this, carrying it forward from Holly Phipps as project manager. Just quickly glancing at the initial study that was done for the CEQA analysis, the initial study does note that the Salinan tribal organization did indicate, let's see if I can find it here. They indicated that they agreed with the findings of the archaeological review, the study that was done.
Yeah. Okay. So that was addressed then in the initial study and by the mitigation measures.
It was. And with the ordinance required mitigation measures, the initial study determined that no additional mitigation measures beyond the ordinance requirements were required.
Okay, thank you. And just to be clear about the Santa Margarita Advisory Council, it went before them. They had concerns, but it was probably, it didn't have to do with the aesthetics, or it did?
Staff myself was not present at the meeting. However, from the notes that I've seen, a lot of the concerns were regarding the public safety, which is preempted by the FCC or TCA. Yeah.
And hence, that's why they didn't make a recommendation.
Because right, and therefore they made no recommendation of the project.
Okay, thank you. One last question, and that has to do with the noise. The speaker, I'm sorry, I didn't get his name, across the way is up above this site. And so when you typically do a noise analysis, it's more of a horizontal analysis, right, rather than one that would be have a vertical component like that. So, and I'm concerned because that AC unit will be running a lot out in North County. And being a little bit familiar with rural lands, it's pretty quiet out there. And so a standard like 60 dB in an urban area or a more developed area is perfectly acceptable. But out there, you might start to hear that, you know. And so I'm just wondering about whether that is something that can be addressed or has been addressed.
Sure. It's by the ordinance. The generator will only be running during emergency situation where the power is not available, as well as for just a few testings. And those testing dates we're limiting to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday during the daytime for a maximum of 15 minutes just to test to make sure that the generator is operating. And the air conditioning unit also has a little baffle to cover the noise, as well as the new noise study also confirmed that the noise coming from the air conditioning unit does meet our county ordinance regarding the noise.
All right.
And it will be conditioned to meet such ordinance for the life of the project for the noise element.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to interject if I may. So are you telling me that the air conditioning unit is a separately driven unit and not by the generator that's there for emergencies?
That's correct.
Okay. I believe there are the power lines that connect to AC units, and the generator's purpose is solely for
the AC unit is powered with the PG&E power. Okay, gotcha.
Okay. I guess comments before we make motions. I am concerned that in a rural environment with these houses and small businesses around there, we find a rather intrusive visual project coming in, and it does, I think, really affect that ambiance that people go out into the country to live by. Actually, staff, could you show me your exhibit of the zoning? It was the first one that you showed, kind of its context. And see, if you look just to the south, there's quite a bit of agricultural land, and I know it's not the ideal location, but those are much bigger lots. And I'm just concerned that that this is stuck right in the middle of all these little, relatively small lots where all these houses and businesses are. When a couple of hundred feet or 1,000 feet or less to the south, it would be on these big agricultural lots. And of course, you have to get permission from the owners and negotiate and all that. I understand, but I do find it uncomfortable that we end up putting these things in a location, because when you drive out there on Park Hill Road and everything, it's just, as Commissioner spoke about before, there's a lot of open land out there. So why does it have to be right next to these houses? I don't know. So I'm having a little bit of trouble making the finding that we have to make with all use permits, that it's not detrimental to the or injurious to property or improvements in the vicinity of the use, because the project does not generate an activity that presents a potential threat to the surrounding property and buildings. Well, I don't think we're preempted about the health threat, but I do think the visual impacts aren't in these cases are not trivial. And so I'm certainly at uncomfortable with this, and at the least I would want to see the project moved to the north and west to mitigate the visual impacts that would occur to the property owners just to the east. But I'll see what the other commissioners have to say.
Go ahead.
I'm going to agree with Commissioner Moltari, and as you mentioned earlier, as I talked about this, I don't know what the fees are paid monthly or whatever, but there's got to be some guy with some grazing land out there that wouldn't mind getting a few hundred bucks a month. I'd like to see this continued, perhaps. I totally agree with him. We're used to looking at these things with houses 1,400 feet away, 1,000 feet away. The 450 is just too much in my backyard. And again, like I mentioned, we've got a lot of rural lands. We have lands owned by large companies that might be able to be negotiated with. I'd like to see this at least continued until they've tried out some of the agriculture and rural lands surrounding this kind of special little spot of small houses.
What I was thinking about was one of the things that's somewhat obtrusive is the fencing. You know, the pine, you get used to the pine overall. Sure, it's not pretty. However, what if there is not another place, you know, one thing that they could do is that not only do they have the slatted fencing around the air conditioning units and all, but they could do something in regards to some trees, some bushes, something like that in order to, with the exception of the gate to get in there, but to have something that gives some visual impact to close off that chain link slatted fence around. It would also muffle any sounds coming from air conditioning, et cetera. If there was some, you know, oleander bushes around or something like that, that could be done. Obviously, that's going to require maintenance, but I do think it's one way to enhance the look and not have it be so, you know, industrial right there.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
If the commission is looking at a continuance, we could continue this to October 25th. And possibly that would give the applicant enough time to be looking into some of the concerns that the commission has addressed. So that would be October 25th.
I have one question, and because I've experienced this with people I know and people buying property that have a little hill and say, oh, I got the perfect place for a tower. And looking at it from the prospect, I hate to say this, but looking at it from the prospect of making a little money every month. Sure. And to have that happen and thrust upon a neighbor, you know, from our point of view here, it's all coming via AT&T and what they want to do. And I understand all that and certainly in agreement with it. But there's also that factor of the almighty dollar. And I'm not sure I would want my neighbor doing that to me. I don't know who went to who. Don't get me wrong, but I do know that this happens very often. People hope to get a tower in the back of their place to make some extra money every month. I don't know if that's a factor or not, but still bothersome.
Yes, I was going to ask you if you would like to weigh in on this.
Ben Dorth, County Council. I just want to remind the commission of some of the law that we're dealing with here. And if we're considering continuing this to the next meeting, in order to potentially, if at that next meeting we were to consider denying the project, there would need to be substantial evidence in the record. The initial burden on establishing that the placement of this a proposed cell tower is the least intrusive is on the applicant. So there would need to be substantial evidence in the record that an alternative site was available. So you would need to make that finding if cancellation were to happen, or if denial were to happen. And availability means that there is a willing landowner mm-hmm. that's willing to lease their property to the cell company, and that the potential site is technologically feasible so that it will achieve the coverage that the wireless carrier is aiming to achieve.
There's also time limits on how long we can take doing this, right, in terms of reasonableness, yeah, I think it is.
Yes.
And so if we were to continue it to October, as Ellen suggested, would that still be reasonable?
Well, I think it would be good to have the applicant kind of chime in here. And
that would perhaps satisfy us more that there really isn't an alternative, and also whether moving it on the site would be technologically feasible. I'm sure you don't want to wait, and I don't know, do you have a comment?
I have a comment before you start. Our question to staff. Is the 475 feet to a residential unit the closest that we've approved this type of cell site in the recent past?
Commissioner Harrison, Kate Shea, just a few months ago, I believe in the beginning of this year, I was the project manager for an agricultural lot in Ground Squirrel Hollow, where I believe the closest residence from the proposed monopine was the property owner's home, for which they were the applicant with AT&T, but the next neighboring home was approximately 150 feet away.
That was the one I was referring to.
I thought so.
I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, this is not going to be the last one of these. And so, I mean, we have to think about long and hard here.
So we're talking about 475 feet, and we've already approved one that's 170 yeah. feet. We really need to think about that.
Yeah.
I thought we had.
If I may, Young has one more aerial. Young and I, on behalf of Holly, did take a site visit on Tuesday, July 24th, and we did immediately note that property to the east. This was prior to receiving the correspondence. So we were concerned about any visual impacts from that closest off-site home. And we did approximate the distance from the permitted single-family residential structure that you see there. I'm not sure the venue of which the gentleman who spoke was referring to, that view to the west that you saw from his patio. There are some accessory dwellings. Two storage sheds that are non-habitable have been permitted by the county. I believe those are located between that single-family residence and just immediately west. And there's also another storage facility permitted and constructed that you don't see in this aerial. I believe they're fairly new. But we did look at the permit history, and that neighboring project site is permitted with that existing single-family residence you see there, as well as storage units. Just to clarify for the record.
So maybe we could have a comment about, did you look at some of those rural sites, and if we were to continue it for a couple of months, would that fall within the reasonableness, in your opinion?
To answer the question broadly, so this broadband service, more than traditional wireless service, requires a direct, unobstructed line of sight to the houses where you're going to have a receiver. You know, when you use a cell phone, you're driving. You know, if a tower is 1,000 feet away, oftentimes it's fine. But when you have a direct line of sight, you know, tower to house, you need to be close. And so that's why the area that we looked in, like I said, I mentioned seven properties. They are all right around that intersection. And I understand the concerns from the neighbors. I understand all that, of course. But to the degree possible, if we have to relocate it 120 feet northwest, again, I think technically that would work. We just need to talk to the property owner and, you know, go out there and look at it and make sure it's, you know, I'm sure we can build it. That's a much preferred solution than starting over something that's 1,000 feet away that technically probably won't work. So we could get that answer from the property owner and internally about the northwest location within the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
We wouldn't need until October
to answer that question.
To answer that question. But I don't know if October was the first available. Is that what you said?
Well,
Mr. Chairman, we have October 11th available also. We just need to make sure that if it takes 6 weeks, we also need a couple of weeks for noticing back to the commission. So we're pretty much into October. We could do it October 11th if that would be more agreeable to you. But we also need to prepare a short staff report for the commission, and then again make sure that we have the notice and the agenda out in time for the commission. So it does take a little bit longer.
If we continue to a date certain, do you have to renotice?
Well, we wouldn't be renoticing. We just need to note it. It needs to be on the agenda, and the agenda needs to be posted in the noticing time.
Great, thank you.
But according to our attorney, we have to find. You were talking about the things that we needed to find to postpone it.
Oh no, not to postpone it. As long as we're within the shot clock, so we have 150 days from when the application was submitted till we take action. I'm not sure how that. I don't have that. I haven't calculated that time, so I'm not sure when that happens. So I was just in case that we were going to exceed that time, I would want to have the applicant agree to that.
Yeah, well, you said something about we would have to make a finding that would justify the extension.
No, not to justify the extension. So I heard that in continuing it, you were instructing the applicant to consider alternative sites. The burden, I said, is on the applicant to establish that the site that they've chosen is the least intrusive site available. So if they're going out to look at alternative sites and they're unable to find one, and we get to the commission gets to the point where you're considering cancellation or denying the project, then at that point you need to make a finding that there's substantial evidence supporting that.
Okay.
Question, or I'm going to ask staff, because it's that picture you had up just a few minutes ago. Just for my edification, could you use a cursor and identify, presume the gentleman that talked to the vineyard is up above, and can you just point out who owns what there? There's three dwellings, and or the three dwellings, including the vineyard. It'd be helpful to me to see who's who here.
I'm not sure we have access to each of those property owners, Commissioner Campbell, but we do for certainty know that the distance you see there measured, that is owned by the second speaker that you heard today. The gentleman's name is, his first name is Ryan. I believe his last name is Alvarez.
Okay, and which is his property?
The one there.
Do you have a cursor
immediately
on?
East, right there.
Okay, that's his property.
Correct.
And the gentleman that spoke with the winery, sir, that's yours right above it, then across the road? Thank you. And then to the left, then, we haven't heard from that person, or we don't know who those people
that's
are.
That's the owner. That's our property.
That's your property.
Correct.
That's the subject location.
South, I guess southwest there.
Gotcha.
That's,
okay.
That's their property. Correct.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, 10 acres. I wanted to say that October 11th would be fine with us. Also, in terms of the design, you know, the tree, we're not... We have a library of different designs, you know, windmills, silos, water tanks, clock towers. Across the street, there are several 80-foot-high pine trees. So we thought, there's a lot of pine trees out here. Let's use a pine tree design. But we are in no way stuck on the pine tree design.
I agree with staff. That's the best choice, in my opinion. If we're going to do it, the tree is the least intrusive. And you do, after a while, become a little bit inured to it.
We do water tanks in other parts of the county that seem more so.
They seem worse to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen this. I've seen the water towers and I've seen the windmills, and I like the trees better, and I don't like the trees.
Mr. Chair, just for the commission's kind of information, staff does go through that with when we get these applications in. We look at what is being suggested and work with the applicant.
Sure.
Oftentimes the applicant will have several different ones to kind of get input as to what might be the most compatible given the context. And so that's part of the process that we do in processing the application. We do that not to short circuit anybody's input on that, but that's part of what we do, is try to work with the applicant to find the most compatible design given the context of the site. So, and sometimes there's not always agreement, but that is something that we work with them.
I have a question for you. If we were to approve this today with a condition that he look at this other location and move it there if he could that be possible? And if he couldn't, to go ahead and put it here?
I would suggest, I would not suggest that. I would, okay. I would strongly recommend we continue it. Part of it is making the findings based on the new location, which we're not sure exactly where it's going to be. Because of kind of some of the issues, I would suggest we, if the commission, what I heard is if the commission wants to continue it, that we would work with the applicant to look at adjusting the location at minimum to the, you know, 100 feet to the northwest, but also possibly explore other locations and at least work with them. Looking at the coverage map, I think topography is going to play a real big role because kind of that direction towards the ag property, it looks like there may be topography in between that would limit sites. But we could certainly sit down with them and go over that with them, as well as adjusting it on this site. I also heard looking at potentially maybe some additional vegetative screening for the wall. I will say that the rock wall will be the best mitigation for noise. So it's one of those things that solid structures, especially masonry structures, are very good at attenuating noise. But they also tend to be difficult to make look like something other than a masonry wall. What I heard from the commission is that's something else we would explore with the applicant.
Well, in the past,
if the commission decides to continue.
In the past, we've actually approved these things across the street from a resident, like 35 or 40 feet.
We have made adjustments. Typically, it's when the site is maybe more consistent. I mean, that's my experience, as I know of a couple where we've moved it away from the property line, more inland or interior to the property. It wasn't going to change the situation that much, and I think staff felt comfortable with that. I think one of the things that I heard that I have concerns with is the applicant indicating that in order to meet their design criteria, they may have to go taller. So I think we want to be clear on what height we're actually approving. I don't think we want to approve them to a height that if they move it doesn't work, and then we'd be back to the commission changing that. So I think on this one, I heard there might be design issues that I think it would be better if the commission was actually acting on an accurate project description if the adjusted location works.
I think that makes sense here because of the topography. If it were flat, and we're just moving it wouldn't be that big a deal.
And my problem is that by continuing this, and now I'm going to stop, we approved a site in Napomo on the corner of Osage and Eucalyptus that's right on the edge of the road. There's two houses across the street. There's a house on the property within 150 feet, and I thought we should move that back. But it was decided by this commission that we would put it there and they would screen it with trees because it was close to those tree line on the nursery adjacent to it. And so we had the same kind of objections from the property owner across the street. She was very adamant about not wanting it there. But we were basically told that we couldn't consider her concerns.
I am not familiar with that. I mean, certainly it's within the commission's purview to consider concerns raised by surrounding property owners. I think with cellular projects, communications projects, there's a limit on the issues that you could consider in denying it, and that's the health issues. That's where we're preempted. Visual is certainly an issue that we can consider, but I don't know the specifics of that project when it came before the commission. I'm just saying that if the commission wishes to address the issues that I heard, including the concerns of the neighbor, that if the commission wants to do that, that it would be best to continue it, allow us to work with the applicant, and bring back a complete project description to act on.
And I agree with our chairman that we have done this. I'm looking at this picture here, and it poses a question in my mind. There seems to be quite a bit of open ground in front of and around this monopine. Pine trees grow rather rapidly. So have we ever considered in these situations actually planting trees that would partially screen at least the trunk part of this and not necessarily the equipment part of it? What's your thoughts on that? If we were to require that, you know, eight trees be planted and cultured to
modify this? We've done that before on certain sites. We've been asked to do that, and we've done it.
Okay.
Staff would like to note that as part of the project description, they are proposing to remove some pine trees and maybe impacting some oak trees. And part of the mitigation is to replace those trees. So for pine trees, if it's a removal, it would be, have to be replaced at 2-to-1, impacting would be 1-to-1. And for oak trees, removal would be 4-to-1, and impacting would be 2-to-1.
I'm aware of, I understand that part of it, but I'm just looking at this picture that we've been referring to and seeing some open space. And making that a requirement would be good, I think.
Commissioner Campbell, also, since they do have to replace some trees, we can look at, and certainly if when we come back, we can look at modifying the conditions to direct that the replacement areas be in those areas that you have identified could use some softening or some screening.
Right. So I understand, but that was regard to the ditches being dug and the trees being removed for that.
But the replacement locations could actually accomplish what you've
changed. Correct. So. Right.
That's right.
If it's appropriate for me to speak.
Go ahead.
The trees require water, so we have to do an analysis of the water, what's available out there on the property. Just
sure.
There may not be any regular irrigation running through the, like a water main running through the street.
I think that, from my opinion, that if it's possible to move it to the northwest, as the neighbors have suggested, that would be a reasonable solution. An even better one would be if it can be moved farther to the south. I'm not sure that that... Having got out there and looked at the topography, I'm not sure that that would really work or not, but I think it's worth at least asking the question. And I think the idea of using some visual screening by the replacement trees around, you know, that makes perfect sense. So with that in mind, I would move that we continue this to October 11th with the direction that we've suggested to staff and the applicants. And see if we can't come up with a better solution. And but I think that, just as an aside to the motion, I think it's pretty obvious that this kind of service is going to be needed in the area, and we need to find a location for it.
I'll second your motion.
Any comment? Call the roll, please.
Commissioner Moultrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Chairman Harrison.
No. All right, at this point, I will.
It's carried, I presume.
Yeah, the motion's carried. Yes. I will entertain a motion to take all the testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
Second.
All
second.
In favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Have a motion, a second?
Second.
Motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting's adjourned.